I think that one of the things that people think about people in self-development is that they're perfect. Everybody has issues. So if you have issues that you're identifying, you're normal. People like to use the phrase, oh, I found that this is wrong with me, this is wrong. There's nothing wrong with you. You're just identifying areas where you can improve.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to episode 57 of the Mad Happy Podcast. I'm Payman.
And I'm Mason.
And today we're super excited to welcome Rob Dial on the show. But before we get into that, we just opened a couple summer pop-ups. Mace, you want to tell everyone what we're doing?
Yeah, well, first off, this is our first recording in our new studio, which is very exciting. We moved offices about 3 weeks ago, and we're fortunate enough to build out a little makeshift podcast studio here in our office. So we're still getting the room kind of set up. We actually just had Phineas come out to LA last week from New York to help us get it up and running, but really exciting. I know that we've been talking about it for a bit and are going to be able to capture video content in some really cool ways, and excited to bring a lot of our guests into our space and do these interviews in person. Always allow for such more meaningful combos.
Totally. And then, you know, as I said before, we just opened a few summer pop-ups, so definitely go check them out if you're in LA. We're open at the Grove, we're open at the Palisades Village, and then we're opening another one in a couple of weeks. So that's been a lot of fun, always challenging, but we love opening stores and seeing people in real life, so definitely come out to those, and we'll be there as much as possible. Today's episode, we are fortunate to have Rob on the show. He is a coach and has a really, really good podcast called The Mindset Mentor that we'll link in the show notes. So definitely check that out. He's really, you know, this was a one-on-one convo that we had as Mason wasn't available that day, but his ability to use, you know, the law of attraction and affirmations to better his daily life and then use those skills that he's learned to help others in doing that, I think is really amazing. Also, I think we get into a lot of childhood things. His parents got divorced early. He lost his dad to alcoholism when he was 15. And, you know, how did he overcome some of those early lifehood challenges to becoming who he is today? How does he think about the world, and how does he think about what he's trying to teach everyone? So I definitely learned a lot and hope you guys do too, because it was a fun one.
The Mad Happy Podcast is brought to you by Optimism. Enjoy the show with Payman and Rob.
Yeah, so I'm wondering, Rob, for you, childhood experience, like what formative memories you have of that time and maybe how you feel like that made an impact as you grew up.
God, got a lot of them. I felt like I was alone a lot as a kid. Like if you look at videos, it's funny because my fiance and I were looking through videos not long ago of me when I was younger, like my fourth birthday party. I'm naturally more of an introvert than an extrovert. Like I can force myself to be extroverted. But if you look at my fourth birthday party, my mom's like going around with the camera and stuff, and all the kids are like playing and having fun in the park and everything. And then it pans to me and I'm all by myself in a sandbox, just playing by myself with like dinosaurs. So I remember being alone a lot. When I was about 8, 9 years old is when I started realizing that my dad had issues. So my father was an alcoholic. And then what happened was I started to realize that he wasn't going to work. He wasn't doing what he was supposed to. My parents then got a divorce, and my mom had to work multiple jobs to be able to basically pay the bills after that. And so I was from about 8 years old, 9 years old on, I was what they call a latchkey kid. Like I would go home 8, 9 years old. I would open up the car, open up the house, and I would just be there for hours by myself. My sister's 6 years older than me. So she would naturally just, you know, be at work and be with friends and boyfriends and stuff when you're 15, 16, 17 years old. So I just remember being alone a lot, and I wasn't sad about it. There's never a point where I was like, oh, woe is me, but it was just, I think it gave me a time to kind of, one of the things I think is my strength is I'm a really deep thinker, and I have no problem being alone and thinking really deeply. And like, I love philosophy and trying to figure stuff out. And so I think that being a kid and being alone a lot developed that really strong. Then obviously another really big thing in my life was my father passed away when I was 15 from being an alcoholic. And so that was a big point in time for my life, because number one, I had never known anybody that had died before then. And number two, it was like the first dead body that I saw. And it was the first time I ever spoke in public. I wasn't planning on actually getting up and speaking at the eulogy. But at the very end, I was literally like, I feel like I have to say something. So I got up and said something. And then from that moment on, I just remember thinking like, this isn't going to be something bad in my life. Like, I'm going to turn this into something good. And so I don't think that I would be doing anything that I'm doing now had I not gone through that and those things, you know, my father didn't pass away.
Yeah, it's so crazy because I feel like so much of it, we don't even think about growing up, but it impacts so much of what we do now. I'm wondering, like, the introversion thing, like, do you feel like early on, like 6 years is a lot of years between siblings when you're younger. Mm-hmm. So do you feel like you felt like sort of like an only child in that way because you were alone and like going through it by yourself sort of?
Yeah. I mean, and at the same time, you know, I was a younger brother. She was an older sister. Usually that's not like a relationship that's super close. Yeah. I feel like, you know, usually if it's like two brothers, two sisters, that's close, or if it's an older brother protecting younger sister. But also at the same time, like my sister, the way that she kind of coped with everything that she was going through with my dad was to rebel. Mm. And so she tried to stay away from the family and, you know, she would get in trouble. And so for me, it was like, yeah, I feel like, you know, being alone is something that I actually love to do. I think it's necessary for me. And, you know, there's my fiance understands that. And there's just times where I just go in the back porch and just sit quietly for a while and just think about things. But I think I developed that. I don't know if I want to call it a skill, but I developed that actually yearning to do that when I was younger because I was just so used to it. And I remember writing and, you know, I remember creating my own videos and stuff. I'd find the camera and I would figure out a way to entertain myself. So funny that I do what I do now where it's like me talking directly to a camera by myself. It's like I'm 9 years old playing with the camera at home by myself. It's kind of just what it developed into, you know, I actually never thought about that till just now where it's like, I'm literally doing the exact same thing, just way more expensive and to a lot more people, you know?
Yeah. Now you have a 14 by 14 room just for that. But
yeah,
I'm wondering, I feel like divorce is one of the things that like is super impactful early on. Like what was your process of going through that? Did you really understand it at the time? And then between that point and the next couple of years, what was your relationship like with your mom versus your dad, who you were saying was less around, less doing things, all of that?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't see my dad much. He was usually, so the divorce happening, I was never, you know, I could see how some kids can think this, but I never thought to myself like, oh, this is my fault or there was something wrong with me. Like I understood like, hey, there's something going on with my dad. And, I remember like, I even remember being told at a young age, like his father passed away, from suicide when he was younger. Mm. And I didn't know the details of it. I know the details much more than I did then, but I had as a kid somehow made the connection of like, oh yeah, he's got his problem because he hasn't overcome what happened to him when he was a kid. Like I knew thinking that.
Right.
And you know, Gabor Mate, Dr. Gabor Mate talks about like all trauma or all addiction comes from some unresolved trauma. And I always thought that was like people just knew that because I knew that for as a kid. Like I was like, yeah, that's my dad's trauma. It's unresolved. Obviously I wasn't processing like that at 9 years old, but I could kind of make the connection. And then there'd be times, you know, where, you know, I didn't spend a whole lot of time with my mom except she'd come home and she would cook. But then there'd be times when my dad would be like, hey, I'm going to pick you up and we're going to go fishing or we're going to pick you up, we're going to go play basketball and that stuff. And sometimes you just wouldn't show. And so I think it also, you know, it's not a good thing, but I think it also built kind of resiliency in myself of like, hey, you got to be able to be self-sufficient. And so I think that when I look back and think about it, I think that it built a lot of really good things in me going through those really bad things of like, you know, I think that I'm love, you know, I have no problem being around people. I have no problem being alone. I'm good in both spots, but also at the same time, it's like, I feel like I've also built what I've built now just because of the fact that I'm like, hey, I've always known that I'm self-sufficient. I have been since I was like 8 years old. Yeah. And there is a form of neglect in that. Like, I don't want to seem like it was good. There is emotional neglect that comes from not being around a child and not getting everything that they, you know, love and support and all of those things. But there was never a point where I was like, I don't think my mom loves me and I don't feel like I'm supported in any sort of way.
Yeah.
So, you know, I spent a whole lot more time with her than I did my dad, just simply because there were times when I didn't know where my dad was, you know, and he would sometimes be in Florida. He'd sometimes be at a bar and then he's from Tennessee. So sometimes he'd be at Tennessee and I had no idea. And so it was just like, he was just very absent. But, you know, I always tell people I got the lucky drunk, which is like my dad never beat me. He never yelled at me. He never was emotionally, physically abusive, any of that stuff. He just got drunk and either disappeared or fell asleep on the couch. Like that was my alcoholic dad, which is, I would prefer that over any of the other ones, you know?
Yeah. And you said, you know, 15 and your dad passed away and you spoke at the funeral. Like, did that feel like a turning point, or is it sort of looking back in time, it feels that way now? Like, in the moment, did you realize, like, okay, like, it's time for, like, my next chapter? Or in the moment, you were just still a kid, just, like, processing and trying to, like, figure out what that meant?
Yeah, I mean, at 15, I was still trying to figure out the world, but there was a part of me that was like, I need to figure out a way to make sure that more good comes from this than bad. And I remember specifically asking my mom, I was like, hey, I think I want to go speak at AA meetings, because I think that if these people who are in AA could see somebody whose child, who is a child of someone who's passed away, they might be able to think of their own children looking at me, and it might be able to help them process in some different way. Tried to get in and do it, but the problem with AA is they don't let you go to meetings unless you're an alcoholic. So they wouldn't even let me in. And so for me, it was like, from that point, there was just like, well, I don't know what there is to do. There was always this feeling of like, there's something inside of me that needs to come out. I don't know what it is. And then what happened was, so that was 15. So a few years, I just went on. I, you know, was typical high schooler, college, party, did all of that stuff. And then 19, I found a company called Cutco, which is knives, and we sold knives in people's houses. And it was like the first time where I felt like I was able to get my, like, release my potential. Like, you know, my other jobs were like basically Uber around FAU, this first school I went to, and I would drive people around campus. I would, you know, drive and, made pizzas, would drop them off at people's houses.
But it was capped, right? There was no unlimited upside in that way, right?
Yeah, it wasn't like my potential was being used at all. And then I found this thing where I was like, oh my God, I can literally do whatever I want to do here. And the thing that was great about them, and the reason why it was a turning point in my life there, was because they're really big on personal development. And so I literally realized to myself, once I started reading my first personal development book, is like, oh, I can basically become my own therapist. And so I took like being okay with quiet time to reading and actually going, well, how does this relate to my life and things that have happened to me in my past? And so it was a big turning point where there wasn't like I immediately started talking in front of people or anything like that when I was 15, but there was like, I feel like there's something else I'm supposed to be doing in my life and I don't know what it is, but eventually I'm going to get to a point where more good comes from this bad thing that happened to me in my life.
And I feel like you, generally speaking, and I feel the same way about my life, is like, I moved to the US when I was 6, like didn't speak English. Like, my parents were immigrants. I was an immigrant. And like, you can go the route of like being the pessimist, you know, like everything's so hard for me, all of that. Mine was always the more optimistic, like, wow, like what an opportunity. It feels like you were very much that way. Was that just like from day one, or you had to develop that over time?
If I'm being honest, man, I don't think that I was really much of an optimist when I was younger. I think I was more of a pessimist. Like, I was more of a complainer. I was more of somebody who made a lot of excuses and stuff. Like, I knew I wanted to do something amazing, but I remember playing basketball. I was obsessed with basketball, and I used to be like, I hope I don't miss. Like, that was always my, it was never like this shot's going in. It was always, I hope I don't miss. And that was kind of like how I lived my life for a long time. And then I had my very first mentor that I hired. I hired my first coach one-on-one. I paid $500 a month one-on-one to work with this guy. And we would have weekly calls every single week. And I remember specifically that he called me out one day. We worked together for 2 years and I don't remember anything else he ever told me. I know it was all good and it helped me out a lot. But I showed up late to the call. I didn't have whatever assignments I was supposed to have done. He used to be a Cutco salesperson, so he was holding me accountable to my sales numbers, all this stuff. And he's like, hey man, like, I'm just going to be honest with you. Like, you're not acting like this is your life. You're acting like someone else is in charge. He's like, let me give you an example. He goes, hey, you know, if a business fails, whose fault is it? And I was like, the business owner. And he's like, what if it's a bigger company, whose fault is it? And I was like, it's the CEO's fault. He goes, and if a business succeeds, obviously that the people in the company help that, but who was the main person in charge of making sure that everyone got together and did that? And I was like, the CEO. And he said, so if a business fails, it's the CEO's fault. If a business succeeds, it's the CEO's fault. And I was like, yes. And he goes, okay. When you get to the end of your life and you're 85, 90 years old and you're on your deathbed and you look back and you realize that there was so much more that you could have done and you didn't do it, whose fault is that? And I was like, that's my fault. And he goes, but if you get to the end of your life and you did everything that you could, you brought out your full potential and you did every possible thing that you could and you look back and you're excited and you're happy and feel great about how your life was, whose fault is that? I was like, I think that's my fault. And he goes, the problem with you, Rob, is that you're making too many damn excuses and you need to realize that you need to step up and be the CEO of your life. And until you do that, nothing will change. And it was like that conversation changed the trajectory of my life, where I was like, oh my God, I'm making excuses here, here, here. And the reason why I'm not getting the sales I want is because I'm blaming the customers instead of blaming myself for how I showed up. And I'm not showing up on time to all my meetings. So it was like, from that moment, it was like something clicked. And I was like, okay, if my life is going to be something, I have to be the person to do it.
And on that note, what made you like seek out these coaches at that age? Was it just like, I want to improve and I know I need that around me to be able to reach my next step, my evolution?
Yeah. So it was funny because I paid $500 a month when I was 19 years old for this guy. But what happened with him was super simple. Is I paid $500 a month for him. I only paid $350 a month for rent. So I paid more for my coach than I did for rent. I would love to tell you that the reason why I signed up with him was because I was like, I'm going to change my life and I'm going to be awesome. But he was really, really good at selling Cutco. He's one of the, like, he hit the Hall of Fame by 21, which means he sold $500,000 in Cutco by 21. Wow. And I was like, this guy knows how to make money. I want to make money. I'll pay him to learn how to make money. Mm. And so for me, it was like, that's what I love about teaching people who are like, I teach coaches now. I teach coaches how to grow coaching businesses, is because a coach was the person that changed my life. Was I hired him knowing that he would be able to teach me his skills and I would be able to shorten my time of success versus trying to go out and figure it out on my own. So I wish it was like, hey, I'm going to hire this guy and he's going to help me change my mindset, my life. But it was really a money thing more than anything else. I was poor my entire life. I didn't want to be poor anymore. And I was like, maybe I can pay this guy and he'll help me not be poor. And I put on a credit card and luckily it worked. And it you know, what's funny about it is it was him. His name was John Berghoff and his partner was Hal Elrod. And a lot of people know Hal Elrod now because he wrote the book called The Miracle Morning. Mm-hmm. But like I was their very first client.
That's crazy.
You know, what's funny is, you know, he sold over 2 million copies self-published of The Miracle Morning. So it's a weird connection that we have in that way. But that was 16 years ago now. It's 2006.
Yeah, that's amazing. And then what was next on your evolution? Like you worked at Cutco and then like how did you decide what was next?
Well, so the thing that happened in Cutco that was great is that we were forced to speak in front of people all the time. Like our job was to public speak and that was it. We would do interviews. We would do trainings. Like I did 17 hour training seminars every single week, 3 days out of 7 days a week. There were 17 hour training seminars. And so it was speaking, 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 speaking. What I loved about it was, and then I eventually, you know, I ran an office with them. I ran the number one office, which was, I was the head sales manager in that office. And I went to open up my own office and was the number one in sales in that office for my category and all of this. But what happened was, and what I really fell in love with was not the selling of knives. It was that people would come in and I would learn something. I'd read a book and I was obsessed with personal development. And then they would come in for our weekly team meetings. We'd have twice a week, every Wednesday and Sunday. And I would teach them these things and it would change their life in some sort of way. And when it like really clicked for me, there were two different times. Number one, there was a rep that I had. His name was Adam. Adam was Muslim and he used to pray and he used to have his prayer rug inside of my office desk and he used to pray. Like I would let him use my office multiple times a day. So he would go and use the prayer rug in the space. I was the first person that he ever came out to that he was gay. He never told us, he was so terrified to tell his family. And he was like, you're the only person I actually trust that I feel like I won't be judged. And so I kind of had a reflection from seeing what he said about me where I was like, oh my God, this is a big deal. There was him. And then there was another rep that I had whose name was Shaquem. And he went by Richard. And he came to me and his father was in a wheelchair. And his father passed away the year before because he was choking. And then they found him and he was on the floor. He died. And he was from a really, really bad part of Fort Lauderdale. Like the part of Fort Lauderdale, Florida that people, like the cops don't like to go to. Like they try to stay away from it, you know? He came into my office and he's like, hey man, I had 7 a.m. meetings every single morning. Whoever wants to come in, I'm going to come in and teach you. I'm going to teach you some stuff. Sales, mindset, all this stuff. He showed up every single day. He became my number one sales rep. Not from a good part of town. None of those things. But what he said to me is he goes, hey, I know that my skills aren't where they need to be. I know that nothing's, you know, in the right place, but I'm trying to get better. And the reason why I keep showing up is because since my dad passed away, you're the only person that's ever felt like a father figure to me since he passed away. And I'm not around people who are good people a lot of times. And so one of the reasons why I just show up is because I just want to be around you and be around the people in this office and what you've built. And so what I realized was there was a whole lot of power in the stuff that I was teaching. And when I left Cutco, and I mean, this guy, he was 18 years old. I was 23 years old. And he said, I felt like I was a father figure. Like, I was 23 as a kid at the time, right? And I left Cutco because eventually I burnt myself out and was moving on to other things. And I went to the corporate world and I was like, man, this isn't it for me. Like, this isn't it. Like, I feel like my soul, this is like soul sucking to me. And I feel like the main thing that I miss from Cutco is teaching people the stuff that I learned. And so in 2015, before podcasts were like a big thing, I was like, I'm going to start a podcast. And I felt like I had a whole lot of knowledge and I felt like I was a pretty good teacher. And I felt like I could, you know, I had a microphone. I literally had this microphone that I'm using right now because I'm a musician and I used to, you know, record with it. And I was like, I'm just going to try to start creating these podcast episodes. And so I just started doing it and started teaching things that worked in my life. I don't want to call myself ever like a guru or teacher or any of that stuff. I just teach people what has been working for me.
Yeah.
And it just kind of resonated. And I did it for years and years and years and it did pretty well. And then it just exploded one day and it just hasn't really stopped, you know? So that's kind of the journey of how I got to where it is now.
That's amazing. I'm wondering right around this time, like you're starting to feel like that coaching ability that you have, the impact it's having on others. Where were you at mentally? Where was your mindset at? Were you still like struggling with things in your own life? Where were you on that journey?
I mean, I struggle with things all the time. And so that's one of the things that I think is important for people to realize. And I think will help a lot of people. You know, I'm in the self-development industry. And I think that one of the things that people think about people in self-development is that they're perfect. And there's the only reason why I think I'm a good teacher is because I have to be a good student. Like I have to use these tools on myself to get myself out of a state where I don't necessarily feel great. You know, like all of the stuff that I teach is really me speaking to myself is what it is. So like yesterday we went to John Mayer. I didn't get home until 1 o'clock last night. I didn't get great sleep. I didn't feel really good today. But I was like, I know strategies to make myself feel better. And so I ended up going through strategies and I feel way better than I did earlier today. One of them involved 5 minutes in the cold plunge, but you know, that's one of the things that I had to do.
What cold plunge do you have?
The cold plunge.
Oh, I just got it. It's literally coming on Tuesday. It's crazy. Yeah. I'm so excited.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. That's the one that I have. And so it's literally kept at 45 degrees all the time. So it's like, I don't need to warm it up. It's like, or cool it down, I guess. It's already ready to go. So like, I was like, all right, I got to go do this because I know it's going to change my state. And so the first thing I'll say is that there's never a point where I'm like, and this I hope helps a lot of people, is there's never a point where I expect to just be perfect. Like there's never a point where I expect to be like, my mind is completely under control or I wake up and every day feels amazing. There's times where I wake up and I don't feel great. There's times when I don't feel motivated. There's times where I feel a little bit, you know, sad, melancholy, anxious, all of those things. I feel all of them. But it's just about understanding what's going on, you know, in my body, in my mind, in everything, and what I'm focusing on a lot of times and how I can actually change it. And so I would say what was happening a lot with, and what was really happening when I was teaching all these things is when I was going through this big transition of leaving a company and starting my own company. And so I was reading and reading and reading and reading and reading because I was going through so much anxiety of leaving to go start a company. And I was trying to make myself feel better. And I use these tactics. I use myself as a guinea pig and then whatever works I teach. And so everything that I teach is all stuff that I use on myself all of the time. And so there's never a point where I was like, I've got life figured out, man. Like I'm awesome. I'm perfect. It was cool to be able to use myself as the guinea pig and be like, this doesn't work. This does work. Hey, if you guys want to listen, let me tell you what helps me. And that's just kind of the journey I've always been on.
Yeah. And for you, you know, I think a lot of like the people in the self-help, self-improvement industry, it's like everyone thinks one, their life is perfect, but also two, like how do you deal with like, of course, like the types of people we are, like we always want to improve. We always want to get a little bit better, but also like you could be sending yourself like a signal of just like, I'm not good how I am. Like if I don't improve, like, you know, Rob sucks. Like how do you deal with that? Which I feel like when you're in it all day could get hard sometimes.
It's funny you say that because that's one of the biggest things that I see when people first get into personal development is there's a reason why they say ignorance is bliss. When you're completely ignorant to it, you don't see the things that you need to work on. But when you wake up to the fact of like, I'm going to work on myself, I always say the example is like, if normal is here, like if there's just a line and this is normal, when a lot of people join into personal development, it's not to get themselves better. it's they join into personal development and now they think there's something wrong with them. Mm. And now what they need to do is improve themselves to just be normal again. Yeah. That's what it is, right? And so it's like, so then they start from a really unmotivated place of like, oh, I'm screwed up and I've got to get myself unscrewed up because they've now woken up to like the way that their life is. They're not taking care of their mind, their body, their soul, all of this stuff. And really what it is the thing that I think a lot of people get solaces in like is everybody has issues. So if you have issues that you're identifying, you're normal. And so what I think it is for everybody is to, number one, realize that if you find something that's, first off, there's nothing wrong with you. People like to use the phrase, oh, I found that this is wrong with me, this is wrong. There's nothing wrong with you. You're just identifying areas where you can improve. And so I don't like to use the words of like good or better. I like it to be, instead of using it and say, instead of saying, oh, well, you know, I want to get better in this, or I want to get better as a person, I want to be more expansive. Like that's the way that I think of it. Even when I say better, if we use that as an example, that means inherently right now, I'm worse.
You're not good
than that better, right? Mm-hmm. There's something wrong with me. And so really what it is like, I like to think of it as like, hey, if I'm trying to improve, you know, it's more of like an expanded version of myself. It's like me expanding into the greater version of myself. And I think it's important for people to realize like everybody's got issues. Like I know people, it was funny, I was thinking about this morning of like, people think that money will improve people's lives and make them happier. One of the most miserable people that I know is a billionaire, right? Yeah. And so it's like, it has nothing to do with that. It has everything to do with the way that they view their life circumstances and what's going on with them. And so I know people that have a ton of money that aren't happy at all. And I know people have barely anything that are happy as hell. And I'm like, man, I want some more of what they have, you know? So I'm trying to learn from all of those people all the time as well.
And I feel like money actually just like magnifies who you already are. So if you're a happy, good guy, like you'll just do more of that. One thing that you talk about a lot and I really believe in is just like manifesting or just like putting out there what you want to get. And I feel like it's like very intangible for people. So I'm curious like how that developed for you or like how you've taught that with your coaches.
Yeah. It's funny because I first learned about the law of attraction through The Secret, the movie, The Secret. It was a book and then it was turned into a movie. It was probably 2007, 2008, I learned about it. So it's like, I was still in college at the time. And I remember they're like, well, just believe that it's going to happen and something will happen. And I was like, yeah, that sounds weird and woo-woo-y or whatever. I don't know if I believe it, but I went to USF at that time and I could never find parking spots ever. Like this school was completely packed all the time. And I was like, I'm just going to believe. I had a 20-minute ride to school. I was like, I'm just going to believe that I'm going to get a parking spot. I'm going to get a great parking spot. And I literally found a parking spot right in the front. And I was like, oh, maybe this works. Now, could it have been luck? Of course, it could have just been luck. Or it could have been the universe or God being like, hey, let me give you a little breadcrumb so you start following this. It could have been either one. But right. One of the things that I find with people is there's two parts that I think are really left out a lot with manifestation, law of attraction. Number one is I don't think manifesting in law of attraction is just sitting there and closing your eyes and saying to yourself, like, all, you know, I'm rich, I'm rich, I'm rich, I'm rich. Because you're going to open your eyes and your BS meter is going to go off. And you're going to be like, no, I'm broke as hell. Like that's what's really going to happen with people, right? There's one thing that has to happen of not setting off the BS meter. When I always tell people they're creating affirmations, there's three parts to an affirmation that I've made up. Number one, it needs to be true. Number two, it needs to be present tense. And number three, it needs to be empowering. And so instead of saying I'm rich, which your BS meter is going to go off, you could say I'm working hard every day to create more wealth. That alone, it's true. It's empowering and it's present tense. I'm working hard every day to create more wealth. And so there's that aspect of it. But then the other aspect of it is you actually got to do something. Like, and so the law of attraction, the last few letters of attraction is action. Like there is the law of action, which is never spoken about in the law of attraction. Like you can't sit there and think that you're going to become rich, but you're just going to sit on your couch all day long, right? Like there is that part of it. And I think the most important part of it is, and I actually put a reel up on this on Instagram the other day, is there's people, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it, and I don't believe it. There's people that talk about how you need crystals for manifestation. There's people that talk about how you got to wait till certain stars and moons and, you know, whatever the planets do. I'm not saying any of those things are right or wrong, but what that is doing is that's taking all of the power and putting it external versus taking the power and making it internal. Mm. And so what I say is that with every thought that you have, you're manifesting, like you are. And so the secret is not to put the power outside of you. The secret is to put the power inside of you. And it's not a belief. It's got to be a knowing. Like, you've got to know with all 40 trillion of your cells that what you want, you will get. And you've got to be so damn sure that there's no bit of maybe this won't happen. And will that pop in? Sure. And when it does pop in, you've got to go back to your hardcore belief and affirmation of what is it you want. But if people knew the powerful creator that all of them are, of manifesting the life that they have, they would pay way more attention to every single thought that they have, because I like to think that every thought is a seed and every seed is going to bear fruit later on down the road. The question is, are the fruits that you're going to get the ones that you want? If they are, then you're making the right thoughts. If they're not, then you need to change your thoughts. And so really what it comes down to with manifestation is you've got to be, number one, very clear on exactly what it is that you want, and you've got to take action towards it. And then number two, you've got to have like hardcore knowing with every single bit of you that it's going to happen. And it's really weird because I don't know if you just trick yourself into finally taking action towards this thing because you're actually like excited about it. Maybe that's it. And maybe none of this stuff exists. And it's like, oh, now I just tricked myself into believing. So now I'm taking action. That's a possibility, 100%. But there is a bit of like when you're hardcore focused and believe that something is going to happen, all these weird synchronicities end up happening. Things just kind of happen. For sure. And I heard Will Smith say this a while ago, but it's just like when you commit to something, the universe gets out of your way and it's like, go get it. I think one of the pieces that's let out of this as well, because people are going to listen to this and think, well, I don't really believe in myself as much, or I don't believe this. It also comes down to confidence. You've got to show up for yourself. And when you show up for yourself, you build more confidence. And as you build more confidence, you start to believe in yourself more. And as you start to believe in yourself more, you start to actually get the knowing that what you want, you're going to get. And so I think there's a lot of different pieces to it. I don't think it's meditating in a field and covering yourself in flower water and you're going to get your manifest whatever it is you want. If you can, that's awesome. I haven't been able to do that. It hasn't worked for me. But by actually hardcore believing in it and then taking action towards it, it's like the universe conspires to help you out.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it is also like the beginning part feels like the most woo-woo because you're like, I have no confidence. I've never done anything yet. Right. And then like now when I look back, I mean, I generally always believed in myself, so I feel fortunate for that. Yeah. But I think now when I look back, I'm like, obviously, like, you know, it was just like leading me to my next thing and my next thing. And I also think the opposite is true, which is like the negative beliefs and things that you put in your head. I think that moves you further away from ever being able to take the action. And I think just some people are prone to that. Like, how do you try to like flip that mindset shift?
Yeah, it's funny because a big part of this that you brought up is really good is majority of the time, if I were to sit down and every one of the listeners that are listening and we were to go through their thoughts every day, majority of them are thinking about what they don't want. And so guess what they're attracting? What they don't want. You know, so if you're planting a seed of what you don't want, you're going to get something that's going to grow that you don't want. Like there's a Tony Robbins' favorite book is a book called As a Man Thinketh. It's like 100 years old. And inside of it, he gives an example of your mind being like a garden, right? He says, you're the only person, you are the only gardener that can get to this garden. But you have to understand that you wouldn't sit there with strawberry seeds and plant strawberry seeds into the ground and think that somehow tomatoes are going to grow. You know it's not going to happen. You know it is in this universe completely impossible to put strawberry seeds in the ground and somehow tomatoes are going to grow. So how in the hell do you think that it's different when you're constantly thinking negative, 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 and you just expect that you're going to have a positive life? Mm. It's the exact same thing. The thoughts that you put into the ground, you're going to get that reality. And so with people who do think negative, and I've been there, like I told you, I used to be more of a pessimist than anything else. I realized that when I focus on what I don't want, I get more of what I don't want. But when I focus on what I want, I get what I want. You know, it's like The Rock has a quote that says, when you focus on you, you grow. When you focus on shit, shit grows. And it's like, you've got to understand that what you focus on, you're going to get and you're going to create. And our brain has something called a reticular activating system, which filters out almost everything, right? And so, you know, like if you were walking down the street and somebody says, Rob, your brain's not going to click into that because that's not your name. But if I'm walking down the street and someone says, Rob, my brain's going to click into that because it's in my reticular activating system. My brain is not filtering it out. It's literally saying, hey, this needs to go in. And so when we're looking at what's wrong, what the issues are in the world, you know, an example is like, why do I always get into terrible relationships? I say your brain's like cosmic Google. Like if you ask yourself a question, if you're like, man, why do I always screw up? You're going to get every single answer of every single screw up you've had in your entire life. It's going to find the answers to the questions that you ask it. But if you ask yourself, why am I going to succeed at this? It's going to give you all of the answers to that. So one of the problems is that people aren't thinking the wrong thoughts. A lot of times they're just asking the wrong questions and their Google search is coming up in their brain of all of the times they've screwed up. And, you know, why won't this business work? Well, because I had a business that failed in the past before as well. So, and it's going to give you all of the answers that you ask of it. And so I think a lot of people, what they need to do is just get really clear on the questions they're asking themselves and the things that they're focusing on. If majority of people listening change the questions they ask themselves and started paying attention to the thoughts that are going into their head, they would notice a massive difference in their life and every single aspect of what they do, simply because their brain's starting to focus on what they want and what's good versus what they don't want and what's screwed up in their life.
And does that actually mean, you know, some people are more prone to negative thoughts, right? Negative self-talk, like self-limiting mm-hmm. beliefs. Does that mean those mm-hmm. thoughts come into your mind, flip it on its head, like I'm going to do this, like that type of, what's the actual way practically for them to do it?
So I'll give you a perfect example for myself, right? I think I got this, probably got it from my mom. I hate that I judge people, right? Like I don't like that aspect of me. And there's a lot of times that people need to realize like your thoughts are not yours sometimes. Sometimes they're literally programmed into you from child, like you're conditioned a lot of times. And so there's thoughts, I don't know if people out there or if you've ever done this, but there's been times where a thought pops into my head at least once a day and I'm like, where the hell did that come from? Like that was not me. It just kind of flew in here, right? And so there was one time I was literally, I'll remember this probably the rest of my life. I was in a grocery store. I was in Sedona. I was in a grocery store and this guy, this was like 2 years ago. He was in there and he was like wearing sandals and he had one of those old school Bluetooth, you know, like the old school ones, like from 10, 12 years ago. But it was like, it was basically like it was a huge one. It was on Bluetooth and it went all the way to his mouth and he's talking on it as if he's on like a sales call at the deli. Like, and immediately I was like, the hell is this guy doing? And there's like an immediate judgment popped into my head. And I noticed, I became aware of it. And instead of noticing it, becoming aware of it, and then judging myself for judging him, which a lot of people do, like they go down the judgment, shame, guilt circle, you know, instead of going down that, I stopped myself and I was like, all right, this isn't the way I want to think about people. And so let me pause for a second. And I literally paused for a second and I was like, tell yourself three things, compliment this guy in your head on three different things. And so I literally went through and I was like, well, I kind of like his sandals. And I was like, you know, he looks like he's got his haircut. He looks pretty nice. And I was listening to the way his conversation was. I was like, he seems like he's a really nice guy as well. And so what happened was I had one negative thing in to come into my head. I became aware of it. And then I replaced it with three positive things. What happens if you just keep doing this over and over and over again, you'll notice that less negative will come into your head and more positive will come into your head. Now, this is super important for people to realize because I don't just preach like, hey, positive thinking, no negative thinking. I'm not all about, I don't like being called a motivational speaker. I don't like any of that stuff because I'm not like, hey, woo, woo, rah, rah, high five, you can do it. I want to give people tactics that they can actually use and understand themselves. Is I do think that the brain is naturally negative. And the reason why is because your brain is a defense mechanism. It is trying to find all of the faults in your reality to protect you. So if someone is negative, you're not odd in any sort of way, but you are able to eventually switch it to what you want it to be. Is it going to be easy? No. Is it going to be quick? No. It's going to require intention and attention. But if you do that, eventually you're going to get to the point where like, I used to be very pessimistic. It's very hard for me to not find the good in any situation, no matter what it is. And I think that's important because, you know, the world always has something going on. There's always bad stuff happening. We can search for it, we can find it, but how we show up to it in a positive way is what's actually going to make a difference in the world in some way.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. One topic we haven't talked about, we talked about earlier, but around substance abuse, I'm curious what your experience has been with that, obviously mm-hmm. with your dad struggling before.
So for me, the funny thing is like, supposedly, I'll give you the whole story so you can understand. So my grandfather worked for Monsanto before Monsanto was like, you know, basically considered the devil. You know, it was like this company that was, you know, now they've done a bunch of GMOs and a bunch of stuff that's really terrible with food. But before, this is like 1960s at this point, nobody really knew what they were. And he worked for them. He developed stomach cancer and he went from being a deacon in the church to becoming alcoholic. And then he was on a bunch of pain medication and ended up killing himself. He shot himself in the mouth with a shotgun when my dad was 12. My dad walked into the room and he saw his dad right after because he heard the gunshot go off. And then my dad, you know, never overcame that trauma. And so that in turn developed him to be an alcoholic as well. So my mom's biggest fear is that I'm going to become an alcoholic. There's not a cell in my body that will ever become an alcoholic. And people say like, there's, you know, there's the addiction gene, there's alcoholism gene, all that stuff. I don't know if it exists. I don't know if it does. It's not going to be active in me. I've already made the decision, right? So do I have a problem with drinking? It's interesting because I'll actually tell you, I've gone full end of the spectrum and I've hardcore, I've done a whole lot of partying in my life. I'm luckily way past that. But I used to do a whole lot of partying in high school. I mean, we used to throw parties in high school with like 1,000 kids. College, still did all of that stuff. And then now it's like, I don't really drink at all, but I've gone from hardcore partying, also gone to like, absolutely no way I will not drink. And I remember listening to Ram Dass, who's a spiritual teacher a couple of years ago. And he said, you know, if you're addicted to alcohol, alcohol has you. If you're completely against it and will never drink it or anything like that, it also still has you. Mm. And I was like, oh God, because I'm trying to resist it so much that it actually still has a hold on me in some sort of way. Yeah. And so for me, it's like, you know, I rarely drink maybe a glass of wine a week. You know, I went to like I said, I went to John Mayer last night. I had two beers when we were there, but like, that's about it. But, for me, it's like, I've made the decision in my mind, like I will not be addicted to anything. And I think that what's really important is that people understand the identity of how they see themselves and what they say about themselves, you know? And so one of the things that I don't agree with, I agree with a lot of the parts of the 12 step, but one of the parts of the 12 step I don't agree with is saying I'm an alcoholic 12 years after you haven't had a drink. Because I think that identifying yourself as something, your actions are going to come from your identity. And so if somebody can say, I used to be an alcoholic, I think that that's more powerful than saying that I am an alcoholic. It's the same way that someone says like in Atomic Habits, the book Atomic Habits, he gives this example of the difference between somebody who says I'm a smoker and someone who says I used to smoke. Is someone who's a smoker, it's actually a lot harder when they identify themselves as a smoker to stop smoking. Someone who says they used to smoke, it becomes a lot easier because they don't identify themselves with that anymore. And so I think what's important for people is to really start to figure out what they identify in their mind as, because their actions are always going to be downstream from that identification that they have for themselves.
Mm, yeah. That's
so for me, so I don't think I'm ever going to be an alcoholic just because I never will be. Like, it's not happening. And I'm telling myself, I've told myself over and over and over again, will not happen.
Yeah, it's so funny. I went to school at Michigan. I drank a lot there, but never really had problems drinking. But after college, just kind of stopped for a long time and was sort of against it. And then recently have begun having it more part of my life when I feel like it makes sense. Mm-hmm. Still, I don't feel like I need a drink every night of the week to have moderation.
Right.
And I feel like it's in such a better place now because I have control over when I want to do it versus saying I'm never going to do this. Same thing with food. I think a lot of the struggles are around like, I never eat this kind of food ever. I think that's easier to do, but there is an inherent control that something else has over you.
Yep. Yeah. Everything's okay in moderation. You know, it's like, we're here to experience. And if somebody's like, you know what, I'm going to go to a concert, I want to have a couple drinks, man, no big deal. Like if someone has a problem with it, though, if someone, I'm not saying someone who used to be an alcoholic, go ahead and start drinking. That's not what I'm saying in some sort of way, because that can go off the rails. But, you know, just in general, an average person that's like, doesn't have a problem with it or wasn't addicted to it, or wasn't alcoholic and all that stuff, to be completely against it, like I was, I can speak for myself, was actually causing a lot of mental strain whenever I would go out with people and wanted a drink because I was so against drinking. Right. And so it's like, if you want to drink and it's not going to hinder you and you're not going to drive and do something stupid or whatever it is that you could do from it, I think that people just need to be okay with realizing that like the most important thing that people can understand is like, you're going to mess things up in your life. You're not going to be perfect. And you know, if you start a diet, you don't know the worst way to keep up a diet is when you do mess up, because you will, because you are human, is to then, you know, get down on yourself about it. Versus being like, okay, I messed up. Now I'm going to be better. It showed me how I fell off. Now I need to get back on track. And so I think it's about people giving themselves more grace versus just being so hardcore. And this is coming from someone who was very hardcore for a really long time on everything, just hardcore routine, getting everything done. is like, you're a human. You're going to have good days. You're going to have bad days. You're going to have good moments. You're going to have bad moments. You're going to have moments where you want to drink. You know, if it doesn't impede you and you're like, hey, I had a shitty day and I want to have some whiskey, go for it, man. Yeah. Like, but don't have 12 of them. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's kind of the thing that I tell people is like, be a human. It's okay. Experience life. And if you're going to have ups and downs, but don't think that there's something wrong with you when you have it down.
Yeah, definitely. Two questions we ask everyone in closing is, if you could nominate someone that you feel like, whether you know them or not, has a great story and impactful mental health journey or just a really powerful story to share, who would it be?
To get on the podcast with you?
Mm-hmm.
My friend Garen Jones has a really great story. Do you know mm-hmm. Garen?
No, I don't.
Oh God, he's got a great story. He used to live in LA. He lives in Austin now, but he's lived like 12 lives in one at 42 wow. years old. I don't even want to tell you the whole story, but I'll give you a quick overview. Like, he was one of the top male models in the entire world. And while he was a male model, got busted with like 20 kilos of heroin, taking it across the border in France because he was trying to make some more money in between his stuff. Now he's like a multimillionaire in Austin through a fitness and food company and stuff. But like, he's probably the best, I would say. He's been, that. You know, yeah, he's been attempted murder on him when he was a kid, all kinds of things. Wow. His dad was murdered, I think, when he was a kid. Like, he's gone through every life that a human could go through, I feel like, and he's only 42.
Yeah, well, know? I may hit you up about that. Thank you.
Yeah.
And then last question is, Rob, what makes you mad happy?
You know what makes me mad happy, I think, is waking up, meditating in the morning, and then just having a cup of coffee and hanging out with my dogs and my fiance. Because I think that it used to be, for a long time, I thought that happiness came from success and from having to do something. And from doing less, I'm actually finding more happiness in those things.
That's a great way to leave it. Rob, thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming on.
For sure, man.
We'll share, of course, the podcast, all your socials, and make sure everyone check those out. But thank you, and keep doing what you're doing, because it's working and people are really getting help from it and supported by it. So thank you.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Thank you guys so much for listening. As always, it means so much to us. If you enjoyed the show, please give us 5 stars on iTunes or Spotify or really wherever you listen to podcasts. We're going to be doing a lot more in-person video episodes, so be on the lookout for those. We're also on TikTok at Mad Happy, where we post the best clips each week. So check us out there, and we'll see you next week with another great conversation.
The Mad Happy Podcast is brought to you by Optimism.